Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry, filling in today for Lori Walsh. A year after the devastating Camp Fire in California, who's to blame and why was the fire so especially catastrophic? Fire in Paradise, a new Frontline episode, premieres tonight at 9 Central, 8 Mountain on SDPB-TV, and you can see it online at pbs.org/frontline. You'll see accounts from survivors and first responders who provide the inside story of the most destructive fire in California history, its causes, and the impact of climate change. Senior producer Dan Edge is joining us now on the phone from London for a preview of Fire in Paradise. Dan, welcome to In the Moment. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So I wonder we can kind of run through some of these questions that we're still trying to answer a year after this fire. The first one that comes to mind, whose fault is it? What do we find throughout tonight's Frontline episode?
Well, I mean, perhaps unsurprisingly, you can't pin the blame in any one place. There are we investigated sort of many different strands of this story over almost a year-long investigation. The fire started because of a faulty piece of electrical equipment. So in that simple sense, that fire would not have happened without the PG&E electrical equipment failing. But then there are many other reasons why that fire became such a big and such an incredibly fast-moving and ultimately destructive and deadly fire. Those reasons that they're connected to the changing climate, to climate change and the drought that California has faced over the last few years. Mm-hmm. And then there's another layer of accountability, which our team investigated in great detail, which is whether the town, whether the emergency services in the town of Paradise were prepared and whether they should have been prepared. And it's quite clear that although Paradise had done actually plenty of thinking about what to do in the event of a wildfire, they were simply not ready for a wildfire of this speed and this scale. And certain things went wrong with the evacuation, which the town is now learning from and other towns need to learn from.
Right. A particularly chilling part of this episode, as I was watching, as the fire is nearing Paradise, the 911 center is receiving call after call of residents saying they can see smoke and ash and wanting to know why they're not hearing calls to evacuate. And tell us a little bit about that communication breakdown and what you discovered about that evacuation process for Paradise.
It's a fascinating and disturbing story. So our team interviewed the 911 dispatcher who was on duty that day, who's trained to deal with calls reporting wildfires, because wildfires have, you know, always been a pretty common occurrence in that part of the world. Mm-hmm. And she's trained to be, you know, healthily skeptical. You know, if you can see smoke, it doesn't mean that the fire is in your backyard. Now, what was happening on that day, which was almost unprecedented, was that the fire was moving at an incredible speed. The fire wasn't just moving forwards from one position, what firefighters call a flaming front. Mm. In fact, it was spreading through spot fires, through embers being pushed through the air at great speed, starting new fires. So what the Paradise Fire Services were caught by surprise by was the fact that the fire was just moving far quicker than they thought. They were immediately overwhelmed by it. Their firefighters were just trying to save lives and save themselves, and so were unable to get good up-to-date intelligence, up-to-the-minute intelligence, on where that fire was. So unfortunately, the information didn't get through to the 911 dispatch team that the fire was really threatening Paradise until it was in Paradise. Now, that's not because somebody knew it was there and wasn't passing the information along. Mm. It's that the new reality of these fires like this is that they move at unprecedented speeds. And so what our reporting shows is that fire services across the country need to be dealing with this new reality and come up with new methods of learning in real time how fast these mega fires are spreading.
Yeah. And in the process of this reporting, do you see, particularly in that area, that there are already steps being taken to adapt to the new way that wildfires are moving in this new age?
Yes, in a number of ways. I think the problems with the evacuation of Paradise are already being addressed. I think as we're seeing this week in California, mm-hmm. PG&E, the electrical utility, is now taking the really big decision that rather than risk wildfires in times of heavy wind, they're just going to shut off the power. You know, that's an extraordinary new reality which many Americans are facing now, that they face a choice between devastating wildfires or no electricity. And both of those scenarios are extremely undesirable.
Right. This episode also includes some really harrowing accounts from first responders and survivors of this fire. Is there, this has to be a difficult question to answer, but is there any particular interview that really stands out to you from this project that really illustrates the devastation of this fire?
I think the one interviewee who really stands out for me and has stayed with me is a nurse our team interviewed, a young nurse called Nicole, who was at Paradise Hospital when the fire broke out and took part in evacuating the patients from that hospital. And then she tried to escape and got completely caught up in really the sort of the beating heart of the inferno. And every time she was filming on her phone as she tried to escape and talking to her husband, who was trying to help her, and she actually had to get out of her car and run through flames. And every time I watch this segment of our film, I actually find myself thinking she's not going to make it. Obviously, I know that she made it. I'm
right.
Delighted that she made it. But it what she filmed and the extraordinary interview she gave really gives you a sense of what it is like to be in what, unfortunately, I think is a new reality for this part of the world, in a climate disaster, these new types of megafire.
Right. Well, what are some other takeaways for you as a filmmaker following up on such a devastating disaster in this area? What has this project meant for you, and what do you hope that American audiences take away from looking at something that has in some ways happened in their own backyard, but almost feels in some horrible ways par for the course as we look at these disasters increasing in scale?
Well, I think it's a warning and an extremely disturbing one. I mean, as I said in our reporting, we came to realize that Paradise as a town had actually thought about these issues probably more than many towns and municipalities and cities across America. And I'd really grappled with the idea of what to do in the event of a wildfire. And they had a plan. They had a plan. But as one of our contributors says in the film, that the plan was simply overwhelmed by the scale and the speed of this fire. So I think if there's one takeaway from the film, it's that we are dealing with a quite disturbing and certainly destructive new reality, and we're playing catch up.
Mm-hmm.
We're playing catch up, and as we're seeing with PG&E and the great big sort of power shutoffs across California at the moment, it's not going to take half measures to deal with this. This is a huge and growing threat.
Right. And speaking of PG&E, you have a contributor in the episode saying, you know, if a responsible party had been an individual that had contributed to this fire, they'd be locked away. But PG&E continues to operate, of course, because it's a massive corporation. What does your reporting tell you about corporate responsibility in these sorts of situations?
Well, there are investigations underway at the moment as to exactly what PG&E knew about the state of the equipment that caused the fire, and whether or not they were negligent in what they did or did not do in the case of this specific fire. what is incontrovertible is that they have a, as a company, they have a history of safety violations, and in one case, an actual corporate criminal conviction over a gas explosion in 2010. And as you say, a Wall Street Journal reporter who appears in the film says if this company was an individual rather than a corporation, they would be in prison. They've been on probation. They've violated that probation. So on the specifics of this fire, the jury's still out. What is incontrovertible is that PG&E equipment caused this fire. Our reporting and the reporting of others shows that, and PG&E have acknowledged it themselves. And that several other fires have been caused by PG&E. And PG&E clearly acknowledged this themselves by their sort of their extraordinary decision to shut off the power this week. That the risk is no longer sustainable for them to keep on the power if wildfires may result.
My guest has been Dan Edge, senior producer with Frontline. A new Frontline episode, Fire in Paradise, premieres tonight at 9 Central, 8 Mountain on SDPB TV. And you can also see it online at pbs.org/frontline. Dan, thank you so very much for your work and for taking the time to talk with us about it today. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me on.